Merry Christmas, everyone.
Christmas.
Since today is Christmas, I'd like to speak very briefly on an American mystic's teachings. His name was Joel Goldsmith. He was a healer, actually. And his entire foundation of his healing practice and teaching was based on Jesus's teachings, which are so close in spirit to Advaita, because the foundation of his teaching was give up the belief in two powers. Give up the belief in two powers. And he is telling you to do that in your life. There is no power apart from God. The person who has created the maximum trouble for you in your life, whether a family member or a friend or a colleague at work, a lover, is not a power apart from God. How can anything be apart from God? Because if it was so, that means there's another power besides God. It's quite simple. Can there be another power apart from God? It may appear that way. It may appear that way because this is the realm of duality where everything has its polaric opposite. There's the good and there's the bad. There's the rich and there's the poor. There's the up, there's the down. There's the black, there's the white. There's pleasure and there's pain. This is the realm of duality. This is the framework of our daily living. But isn't it obvious that each human being we meet are instruments of the same consciousness, shaped according to their conditioning? How their parents treated them, which country they were born in, which religion they were born into, and so on and so forth. On the basis of which they made their life decisions. All of us are operating right now today based on our conditioning, whether we were born into a wealthy family or a poor family. So when we realize that the person in front of us is also saying what they are saying based on their conditioning, which God made. What happens is, we may still not agree with them. We don't have to. But the aspects of hatred, malice, ill will, and so on are pulled out from the equation. Those don't operate anymore. So we find that our reactivity is now less, and we find we are responding more because we have given up the belief in two powers. We may still feel that someone has to be told something, but the space we are coming from becomes very different. It is not a space of bombarding the other with our views and judgments, pointing fingers of blame, trying to make the other feel guilty or ashamed. The end result is we find we are more at peace with ourselves, at peace with what happened because we accepted it as the will of God, and we are at peace with the way we are responding to the situation, and we are at peace with the other. So this simple teaching transforms our relationships. That phrase we so love, you did this to me, you said this to me. The problem is the to me, that you did this to me and you said this to me. But they just said it, they did it, based on their nature and conditioning. But we take delivery of it in a very personal sense. How dare you? Who do you think you are? Now, you can live with this battle all your life. Till your last breath, you're finger pointing and blaming people and compartmentalizing them. Or you live with the knowing that this is the game of life. Everyone in my life comes with their blueprint, designed by a power superior to them, so to speak, will make their moves on the chessboard of life. I too have to make mine. But when I realize that a hand above is moving the pieces, and more importantly, at the end of my life, which may be 50 years later, 30 years later, 10 years later, 2 months later, I have the knowing that all the pieces on the chessboard, whether it is the pawn, the knight, the bishop, the queen, or the king, or black and white, go into the same box. But we have to live this knowing. That is the thing. When you face your daily travails, trials and tribulations in your relationships, with this understanding that we are all moved by a higher power, we find that we are no longer crucifying people the way we were. We are allowing them to be. That is what happens. We are allowing people to be the way God created them. We are not trying to change people. We give up this excessive compulsive need to change people to the way we think they should be. You see, in the ancient days, the kings were enlightened. That is why they had crowns. The crown represented enlightened consciousness, the open crown. The kings were neutral. All subjects were treated equally in those times. And that is why they were made kings. Decisions had to be taken to run the kingdom. But because of their enlightenment, those decisions were not taken on the ground of doership. They were not swayed how we ordinary people judge and condemn people in our lives. They were trusted to take the right decision because of their enlightened consciousness. That is how kingdoms were run. Now the point is, in our own lives, are we able to do that? Are you a beacon of peace, or are you taking others' peace away as well? In your short lifespan here, are you willing to put your tennis racket down when you find in a particular relationship it's always action, reaction, action, reaction, hitting the ball back and forth, back and forth, back and forth all the time? Are you willing to say, all right, this is not working anymore, I put my racket down? Or as Joel Goldsmith said, lay down your sword, withdraw all opposition, do what you must, but then allow things to be. Which means a non-resistance to life, because the resistance is inside us. It appears that another person is the cause for our antagonism and resistance, but it is arising in our consciousness. Whatever you resist, or the person you resist, is arising in your own consciousness. It's not arising outside your consciousness. Can you see how important this point is, yet so subtle? The person who is triggering you, is poking you, appears to be separate from you, but it's arising within your own consciousness. They are in fact giving you an opportunity to realize that. And as we all know, the universe will give us plenty of opportunities in the form of psychological suffering. Pain we have to endure, what comes our way, unasked, our lot, so to speak. We have to endure it. The problem is we convert that pure pain into psychological suffering. That is what happened. There is no master in the world, no teaching in the world that can take away the pain which is assigned to a person. But that teaching which says, when the pain comes, be with it, witness it, see it as pure pain. But it takes away all other garbage. That is the teaching to look out for. The garbage which is in the thinking mind. And when that garbage is cleared, which is invariably about what someone did or said, including yourself, in a dead past, which is gone, or an imaginary future, which will never come. When that garbage is removed, you have the peace of being, the peace of God. That is it. It's only the removal of the garbage. There is nothing else. That is why Goldsmith used the phrase, pray without ceasing. He kept referring to the Bible. Praying without ceasing does not mean we are praying all the time for what we want God to give us, as if God is a Santa Claus. Praying without ceasing is abiding in your being, being totally available. If someone comes to you and sits in front of you, are you available for that person, or is your mind thinking about other things? Or are you available here and now as pure being, pure presence, an aspect of God has come in front of you? Is it being honored? And how is it honored? By being there, listening to the person, not immediately responding with my views. Many of us do that. We don't give the other person a chance to complete what they are saying. We have this need to immediately say something back without realizing that what we are saying is based on our own conditioning. It may not be right, but we assume it is right. We assume the other is wrong. On what grounds is that assumption made? Your view and opinion is based on your genetics, your conditioning, and your nature. It does not mean it is right. It is your view. You are entitled to your view just as the other is entitled to their view. So simple. There is no right and wrong operating anymore. So someone may try to convince you of their view and you say, all right, I've heard you, but I still feel I'd go with my view. You have to decide that. But you have dropped the need to convince others. You express your view and you leave it at that. So the games the ego plays, you see, they start falling apart. With the wisdom teachings, they don't have to hold on to these anymore. And then people tell you, hey, what's happened to you? Is something wrong? You're not replying back, you're not reacting. What's gone wrong with you? But what has gone wrong with you is actually the sense of doership in the ego is dissolving, and you are more and more witnessing the game of life, the play of life. Just look at your own experience. What was so important 2 days ago, is it as important now? Someone said something or did something. With the passage of time, that has gone like mist in the past. That is how important it was. Forget 2 days ago, in your deep sleep it disappeared. What antagonized you 2 days ago disappeared in your deep sleep. How come? The biggest source of your trouble, be it an event or a person, did not exist in your deep sleep. But yet you arrive the next morning and say, that person said 2 days ago that. And it is a known fact that the greatest form of healing is simply the presence of being. The greatest form of healing is simply the presence of being. And both Jesus and Ramana Maharshi have made this very clear. In Ramana Maharshi's case, when that mother got her son and said, my son is dying, Bhagwan didn't do anything and the boy got up. And everyone said, miracle, miracle. He said, no, excuse me. I want to set this straight right now. If I had the power, I would be able to cure anyone who came. But 2 things happened here. One is, it was the destiny of that boy to get cured. The other is, Bhagwan made it very clear, there was not even a sankalpa, there was not even a wish in this body that the boy be healed. Even that wish didn't arise. But because Ramana Maharshi was abiding as pure being, as you could say the self or God or the source, or call it what you want, the healing took place. Same happened with Jesus. When a lady touched the hem of his robe and got cured, he wasn't even aware that she touched the hem of his robe. It is the pure being which does the healing. So are we bundles of becoming, bundles of hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, spite, arrogance, pride, shame? Or are we just being? And once again, Joel Goldsmith constantly refers to when Jesus told Pontius Pilate, who said, look, your people have said it, you have to be crucified. I am not saying. And Jesus tells Pilate, thou can have no power over me unless it is given from above. Don't worry, you can have no power over me except if God wills it. Total acceptance of the will of God. Till his last words, 2 most important pointers. One is on forgiveness. When he said, Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He did not say, I forgive them. This is the biggest misconception. I am going to forgive someone. Who are you? What authority do you have to forgive anyone? My teacher would get very upset on this point of forgiveness because he felt it was most misunderstood. Do you feel you're greater than the other person that you say, I forgive you? You are an instrument of God just as the other is. Oh, I forgive you for what you said and did. Who the hell are you? And on the cross, what did Jesus say? He didn't say, I forgive them. Lord, you forgive them. You see, because the problem with this is all our lives, it has been me versus the other. It has not been me and the other. And this teaching says to bring that back, reverse that back to its natural state of me and the other. So if you are forgiving someone, it is still you versus the other. And his final words, not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. But before that, he did say, Lord, why hast thou forsaken me? Me, I did your work. In that excruciating pain, that prayer came out. Why have you forsaken me? All my life I was doing your work. And immediately, not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. And we worry about our problems. Same thing with Joan of Arc. At the age of 19, when she's being burnt at the stake, she's telling herself, bloody hell, as a young girl, I start hearing the voices of Archangel Michael saying, pick up the sword, go fight, lead the army. At the age of 17, then falls into a trap and is burnt at the stake for heresy. And on that stake, she's saying, I heard your voice. I did as you commanded. What is this? And in the final moment, the surrender happened. This too can only be your will. So as a last wish, she said, if someone can stand at a distance with a cross held high, let that be the last vision I have here. When we accept in our life whatever happens as the will of God, that is called surrender. And you see, this point gets missed. I remember I was in a Jesuit school. There was a boy, most lovely boy in our class. I mean, everyone liked him, but he was very bad in studies and he failed 1 year. And I'll never forget, in a Jesuit school, in class, one day the teacher asked him a question which he couldn't answer, made him stand up and humiliated him, told the student, you will be a failure all your life. And obviously that boy was broken. Now, is this called following the teachings of Jesus? You see, that's the whole problem. We separate our spiritual journey from daily living. I have seen it so often. Your master is saying something totally different and you are doing something totally different. So many times I see this, whether it is someone who's on the path of bhakti, who's doing 2 hours of japa, chanting, shringar, aarti, and then daily living is a mess. Someone who goes every Thursday to Sai Baba's temple and office job is hafta, government job. And this teaching reverses the whole thing. If you accept everyone as an instrument of God, then aren't you worshipping God? Is there a greater bhakti? Can you right now, in your mind, choose that one person who has been the cause of your pain and place a flower at their feet, in your mind, and say, thank you. I know who you are in your true essence. The most common example given in Advaita is a movie screen. The movie of your life is playing, and you start loving and hating certain figures without realizing that without the light, there would be no movie. That's it. So simple. It is very simple. You see, that's why my teacher got fed up, because he said it's not complicated. It is so simple that we don't get it.
Yes.
The truth is simple. Who is it, that famous man who said, the truth is simple, if it was complicated, then everyone would get it. It is very simple. Live the simple life. Live the simple life. Be simple in your thoughts, words, deed. Walk gently. Live simply. That's it. Don't give advice to others when you're not asked for it. Very important, because then you think you know best. The person didn't even ask you and you've offloaded all your advice. We all do it. I think you should. We are advising everyone all the time. There was that other thing I read. I learned from the mistakes of others who took my advice. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything?
Hi, Gautam. It is Christmas today. And one of the things about Christmas typically that is talked about is forgiveness, you know, letting bygones be bygones. It's typically a time for family to come together, friends, and celebrate. A year ago, I said what you just, I made the mistake of telling someone I forgave them. over the course of the last year, I found at various intervals a feeling of hurt or anger coming up, accompanied by a lot of thoughts related to the pain I perceive them to have inflicted upon me. And I feel a great desire to communicate the impact as I see it. I've tried for a year to find forgiveness and resolve it within myself without needing to talk to this friend. But I feel a strong need to speak to him about it. Is there a way that one can resolve it within oneself? Or if the desire to speak to that person arises, is it necessary to speak to them? Is that the best course of action?
That's a wonderful question, actually. But most importantly is whether the other person is willing to listen to us. If that person is not willing to listen, then it has to be resolved in one's own consciousness. Which means it is not necessary to speak to the other person, but it may be one's nature. For example, let's say I want to get it out of my system, right? So if the person is willing to listen, then I have the opportunity. Now the point is, when I speak, I may say, you said this to me and you did this to me, but with the understanding operating behind me, that to me and that he did it is diffused. You know, he was acting out his role. So in the mechanics of speech, you may say, you said this to me, you did this. But you're not coming from that space because you have accepted that he was doing precisely what he was designed to, which is inflict pain, right? But your nature being to express yourself, he giving you the opportunity to express yourself, by all means, one must honor that. Because even that is what was meant to be as far as you are concerned. But now, if you pin your hopes on whether he'll agree with your point of view, that is setting up the stage for another disappointment, you see. But if my nature is, I am expressive, I would like to get this out of my system, I have the opportunity, let it happen naturally. But when it happens, as Krishna said, action is performed, rewards are of no consequence. And I'm clearly talking to someone who did precisely what they were meant to do based on the power above. So I may find that the words I use and the way I speak may change.
If I may ask one more question. When an individual has gone through trauma in the past, very often that can also color their perception of the future. I myself have found myself at times imagining myself having to avoid certain situations in the future based on my experiences of the past, or having to assert certain boundaries in the future based on those boundaries having been crossed in the past. So how does one relinquish or release the trauma of the past and not allow it to influence the way we move into the future?
Another good question, because we all have suffered trauma in some form or the other, by and large. It has become part of our conditioning. The way we view life will be through the prism of that trauma. That cannot be undone. The working mind will kick in and say, this is what has happened to me in the past, and therefore I try to ensure that it is not repeated. So boundaries are set up. That is the natural functioning of the ego. But because the ego is so fear-based, because it is the inherent nature of the ego, what happens is these boundaries or walls become very thick. And because we have lost trust in the one force, the Almighty, and fear to have the same experience repeated, our conditioning has become so encrusted that we don't realize that we are actually building many walls like that. But when we start going with the flow of life, knowing that trauma happened, it does not mean it has to happen again. It will happen again only if it is the will of God. It's a big leap of faith. Yet, the natural instinct is to want to prevent it from happening, by all means. But you will find that you will loosen into setting up these boundaries. They will not be coming from that fear-based separation of me and the world. The world is out to get me and to harm me and to hurt me, which is what the ego started assuming, because it fears death. Everything is a fear of death. You may be 15 years old, you may be 50 or 75 or 90. The ego operates based on the fear of death. What will happen to me?
So a sense of vigilance is not required.
It cannot be helped if that is the past conditioning. It can be witnessed when it arises, but it is certainly not required, because there is no power that can harm you unless it is meant to by a higher force. You see, I knew this gentleman. He was very controversial in his tenure. His name was A.A. Khan. Aftab Ahmad Khan. He was in the police and he also created the first anti-terrorist squad. And he was known to lead from the front. He would not sit in his office. If a call came or there was some situation, he would go. So once I asked him, I said, aren't you afraid? He said, the joke of my life is, he was very fond of English language and literature, poetry and all that. His mother forced him to do the IPS exam, Indian Police Force. He had no interest. And he told me, I tried my best to fail that exam, and I passed. He said, since then, I know nothing is in my control. Then what happened? I believe this came in the papers in the 90s, or I don't know when. There was a news item. Two men blow themselves up on a bike in Bandra. Was the news item. Now, I'll tell you what had happened. Based on investigations, it was found that these two men, for the last 15 days, in the middle of the night, were taking rounds of that Turner Road or Carter Road or whatever you call it. There's Bandra police station there. Yes. They had an intent to throw a haversack full of bombs into the police station, because even that was discovered, the haversack. The plan was set. So what happened? Unfortunately for them, the night before, the BMC decided to lay a speed breaker, which they didn't realize. So they went in speed, it jerked and it self-exploded. So he told me this. He said, you know, if I am meant to go, that is already decided. I cannot do my job operating on fear. And fear to what extent? His young boys, you know, at the age of partying, late nights and all, he would get phone calls in the night, your son has had an accident at 2 a.m. Children are young, they are partying. Now, any father would panic at such a call. But he said, I had to be so sharp, because what if it's a ploy to pull me out of the building? So then our team would have to go find out if it was true, which it was not true. So this is the point, you see. vigilance and all is fine. You can be as vigilant as you want, but you cannot control what happens the next moment. You absolutely cannot control it. Now imagine all one's life being vigilant. We may miss so many opportunities. We may be unavailable to so many people because we are scared and afraid based on our past experience. See, it's not our doing. It is not our doing. It is what has happened in the past.
Is there nothing which is irreconcilable?
How would you mean that?
Sometimes when one goes through difficult experiences, there are things which one may find hard to reconcile. Is it possible to reconcile almost anything?
Yes. And that is the peace that the sage has. That nothing in the world of duality makes sense. If I keep trying to find cause-effect relationships all my life, I'm stuck between this polaric opposite. When I accept nothing makes sense, means I'm no longer operating from my thinking mind all the time. You know, I say something and a person takes offense and I didn't mean it. It doesn't make sense. I didn't mean to hurt you. I said something and you took offense. Nothing makes sense. When by and by you live this understanding that you cannot try to rationalize situations, think in terms of linear time all the time, then everything is reconciled. For ordinary people, it's a challenge because our attitude to life has not shifted. We are still operating on our past triggers and patterns. You know, and then the sad part is something may be taken away from us, which changes the equation, and we are still operating on the past patterns. The ultimate reconciliation is this only, whatever happens in the will of God. I am reconciled to that. And not the doing by anyone. Whatever happens is the will of God and not the doing by anyone. As the Buddha says, my teacher's favorite sentence, events happen, deeds are done, consequences happen. But there is no individual doer of any deed. I can hear many people saying very hard. Who said it's easy? It is hard.
Can I share something?
Sure. Now I'm feeling it's a bit cold. Is anyone feeling cold? Or Ashwini, sorry, but you have given some exercise to you today. What is your name?
My name is Rajan. Yeah. The example that you gave, these two guys who blew themselves, you know, what I hear is their intention to blow up this police station. That is what triggered the whole consequence that they had to blow themselves up, the BMC coming in. So there's always a cause and an effect. You know, I always see in my own life, out of my own experience over the last 25, 30 years, that every action that I've tried to do, you know, what is my intent? You know, whom am I trying to get even with? You know, what am I trying to teach? Or what do I want? You know, what is my expectation from life? And the consequence of that is what causes the pain or the suffering. So there's always a cause and an effect. And what causes me to take the action, that is definitely from the higher will. My coming here this morning, you know, is definitely divine will. You know, just 2 days back, I saw this ad where there is this satsang happening. For a long time, I've been wanting to come here. So it was the divine will that brought me here. So I definitely know that there is a divine plan and I'm nobody in this whole thing. And every day I have a story that I remind myself. It's more for myself where I post on Facebook. And this morning it was about being. You know, we have a to-do list. And I said, there's no to-do list for me. There's a being list, you know, that I just want to be. You know, I love the being to operate. And so everything is based on our intent. You know, what is the intent that we have in each of our actions? And that's what sets our life. If there is a pain, what is my intent? So I like Buddha's story where he says, you know, where if you plant a sugarcane seed, you will get sweet sugarcane. If you plant a neem seed, you will get a bitter neem. So what am I planting in my life? And that's what I'm going to reap. So I just felt I wanted to share this. Thank you.
Different perspective here. Imagine a boy who is trained to be a terrorist. From childhood, he is trained to believe the other is the enemy. He is trained to use guns. Where would his intent be? You see, because this intent is based on, if I do good, I will get good. But have you been given the opportunity to even think like that? The thief, who belongs to a family of thieves, brought up as a thief, conditioned to be a thief, are we waiting for a realization that I should not do thieving? So this teaching is not operating at that level of cause and effect. In fact, what is this teaching saying? A murder happens. Now there are many possibilities. One is the murderer gets caught. The other is the murderer cannot be found. It's another possibility. Yet another possibility is the murderer is caught. There is not sufficient evidence. The third possibility. And the fourth possibility is a wrong person is convicted for the murder. Now, which of these four happens? So where is the question of intent? You see, this is it. This acceptance that in life, everyone tries their best to do what they must. Results are not in my control. That's it.
So how do you look at the example between Gautam Buddha and Devdutt, his own cousin? You know, both of them had the same opportunity. All of them, they were brought up in the same kingdom. You know, Siddhartha went out, you know, searched for the truth. He became enlightened. Devdutt, you know, he could have followed his own cousin. He could have followed on that path. But he chose to take revenge. He said, no, I will snatch everything that he has.
He could have, but he didn't.
Yeah. He had the opportunity. I'm saying he had the opportunity. You know, Gautam Buddha, after he became enlightened, he gave him all that. Yeah, that's what. That's again, divine will. Yeah, that's right. Agreed.
In your own family, in anyone who has siblings, brothers and sisters, everyone turns out differently.
Absolutely.
Same conditioning, same household, but different natures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Divine hypnosis.
Divine hypnosis. I loved that phrase which my teacher used. Divine hypnosis. We are all hypnotized into believing that everyone does things.
I've been reading Nisargadatta Maharaj's teachings and Ramesh's and yours. I watch your videos and listen to your podcasts. It's been 2-3 years I'm in touch with your teaching. And there's an intellectual understanding of it. So I have a question. It's about desire. Now there are different types of desire. Some are simple. Let's say I want to eat a Cadbury, I can go to the shop and eat it. There are exceptional desires, such as let's say one wants to become the president of the United States, which is just impossible, right? So my question is how to live with those exceptional desires? Because I accept that it's God's will, and my main concern is, okay, to God, I pray, either fulfill it or delete it off my consciousness. Because I cannot live with it, the itch that persists and it distracts me. So how to deal with that itch? How to live with that itch? Because it distracts you, it doesn't let you go about your day. And it makes you depressed sometimes.
And this is what happens with the understanding. So whether it is to become the prime minister or whether it is your Cadbury chocolate is irrelevant. The issue is desire. Now you see, I have used this example many times, which Rameshji would use. A man comes home from a hard day at work, sits in his chair and tells his wife to get him a beer from the fridge. And she opens the fridge and says, oops, run out of beer. Desire arose for beer. Desire arose. Desire is not met. Now he says, all right, send the boy down to get it from the shop. She says, shop is closed. It's Sunday or Monday or it's night, 8 p.m. Oh, now what happened? There are two routes. the sage accepts that the desire arose for beer, and it was the will of God that the desire was not met. The ordinary person will get involved. How dare you not ensure that a beer is kept for me? What kind of stuff are you doing at home when I'm away from home? Don't you have a checklist? Aren't you supposed to see? How stupid you are. The ordinary person has got involved in the desire and created misery for the other and himself. That desire cannot be wiped out. It is the will of God to have the desire to be a prime minister on the Cadbury chocolate. That itch is in pursuing the desire, I am becoming reckless. The itch is the pursuing of the desire. In a sage as well, a desire may arise. Supposing someone tells a sage, let's go for a drive, either I can take you to the beach or to the open fields, he will have a preference. He's not going to be a zombie and say, take me wherever you want to take me. You see, now supposing the road is closed, he is not going to go about telling the guy, hey, you should have checked, why did you bother me? Now I said this, now I can't go there. You see, that dialogue is burnt for the sage. Desire may arise. That's it. Whether the desire is fulfilled or not is the will of God. Pursuing the desire is also the will of God. The desire is to become the prime minister, it is pursued. But that pursuing is happening with the total and complete understanding that if this desire is meant to be fulfilled, it will. If it is not meant to be fulfilled, I can do nothing about it. Yet, my nature is to pursue it. I try to pursue it. So it becomes easier and lighter by and by to deal with desires. That's what happens. I don't know what the time is. That clock is turning the other way. It is time up. Ho gaya time. Have to go home. There's some Christmas cake lying there if anyone wants to have a bite after the talk. You wanted to ask something? Yes. Sure.
So I wanted to ask that I'm Chandana. Yes. So the daily teachings and the teachings of Sai Baba or any other guru, in this hustle of daily work and this 24/7 hustle, work, so how do we remind ourselves every moment, how do we think that this is the teaching and we are learning something from this suffering or something good in the daily work?
The best way is to forget it. Forget all this. Forget it. I'm not meaning this as a joke. You know what will start happening is, when situations come up, the teaching will come in. Because it appealed to you already, right? Something has appealed to you, so you want to be reminded of it. It's already clicked. So it's too much hard work to remember all this stuff. Leave it to God. He exposed it to you once. Now life will bring a situation or an event at work or a person. It will come on its own. Hey, you know, I remember this. Because the ego is so used to doing and controlling that now it wants to control the teaching. I must use it when a situation arises. This is exactly the opposite. Forget about all this. It will happen. You see, because you didn't choose also the first time the teaching came to you. Someone took you to Sai Baba or whoever or whatever. Someone said something, it came your way. You read a book, saw a video. Allow that force to do its job. It doesn't need your help.
Hi Gautam, my name is Porus. I just want to ask you, the mind chatter that we have, that is constant, continuous, is it pre-programmed or is it according to each one's destiny or DNA or whatever you might want to call it? Because the mind chatter is continuous. And we know so much about dhyan and meditation that helps, or through japa chanting. But just to clarify, is it pre-programmed according to who you are?
Yes, it is pre-programmed. It is. So some people will have more mind chatter and others may not have that much. Mm-hmm. But even for those who have a lot of mind chatter, the only thing to do as far as this teaching is concerned, not to reduce it, because that is also an effort, yeah. That is also, is witness it. I'm watching cars going by on the road. I'm sitting on Marine Drive. I see many cars. I'm not running after them. The chatter is there. The chatter, the cars driving past is there. Many cars. But with this understanding that outcomes are not in my control and nobody does anything, I find that the weight of the chatter has been reduced to simply witnessing it.
So where we suffer is when we start to identify with the chatter?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We cannot wish the chatter away. Again, you know, I have come across people who will do japa, maybe 1 hour japa. And when I ask them to be honest with themselves that while doing the japa, were there other thoughts? They say yes.
Yes, that is also true.
It is. That is the nature of the mind. So the point is that this mind chatter, when it is not based on doership, when there are no thoughts of ill will, spite, hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, and shame, it is witnessed as the working of the mind. It's chattering away. But when we pull out its foundations, it stops bothering us that much. That's what happens.
So pulling out foundations means not to keep identifying with the chatter, with the thought continuously.
Pulling out its foundations means when I live my daily life with knowing that everyone is an instrument of God, just like me, I'm pulling out the foundations. If someone says something and does something, as Maharaj said once, he said, supposing in the day you are meeting someone or driving somewhere, change your internal dialogue. Now, this is conceptually, from I see something and I hear something, to something is seen and something is heard. It's a very subtle shift.
Yes, sir.
Because it's not now pointing back to the me, which you are referring to as identification. In that sense, one can try to be disidentified from the happening, but that is again bringing in the ego through the back door. Because now I want to disidentify. That is why this teaching says merely witnessing the chatter for what it is. When the teaching goes to the heart, which can be a process, how do I know if tomorrow the person in my life, the troublemaker, stands in front of me and I find I'm no longer as troubled by them as I was? Then I know that the teaching has gone to the heart. I may still get bugged because I am also operating on conditioning. But I may find myself saying, hey, you know, let's go and have a meal. You'll be shocked. And you'll shock the other person. All right, we've had our differences. Let's go out. That's what starts happening.
So that is why what is good is taking away any identification. And I study a little bit of Buddhism. And in Buddhism, they teach you in a very nice way that instead of saying, I am feeling cold, they just say, this is cold or this is hot. You take the I out and there's no identification after that.
But it's hard work. I am feeling cold based on the way God made this body-mind organism. This body-mind organism is feeling cold. But it is no longer a complaint. Why is it cold? Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I get a sweater? Everything is viewed as a happening. As a happening.
Dissolve the eye, it helps.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good. Had you come, were you in touch through Mona Mera, Manju?
Manju and I worked together.
Okay.
Before we...
Oh, you were in Australia? Which part?
Sydney.
Okay. So there was a loss in the family or something?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Was she ailing?
Yeah, just for about 3 weeks.
Oh.
Like we arrived and she just passed away about 10 days.
Oh, so when it started when you arrived? Or
yeah.
Look at that karmic bond.
And today, ironically, even my mother passed away 10 years ago.
Oh.
Just went to sleep on Christmas Day.
That's the best way to go.
Yeah, no? So I was fortunate to be here for both.
That is the... You see, there's a word called Rinanubandhan.
Huh?
Rinanubandhan.
What is that?
The cosmic bond of a relationship.
Oh, okay.
The cosmic bond. You, I mean, not exactly that. Your Inanubandhan was so strong that circumstances made you come here for your sister to be present at her passing.
After 3 years.
You see, that is what happens. That is how the universe operates. The bandhan, see how it operates. Circumstances are arranged that you are presented by the divine force to be at a certain place at a certain time for a certain event, none of which is in your control. You know, we may think we are going for one reason and we'll end up for another reason. Just see that. It's absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. And proof that there's a divine will in operation. Fantastic.
Nothing is a coincidence.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's really
bizarre.
I don't know if bizarre is also the word one uses anymore, but it's just, you know, at one level it's so fantastic because you're kind of numbed to
situation.
Like what happened. And it's these teachings which provide the support, you know, the cushion, the total acceptance that it was meant to be this way. It could not have been any other way.
What does Ramesh say in one of his books? If it's meant to happen, it will always happen.
Yeah.
If it's not meant to happen,
no power on earth
will ever happen.
Will make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, even coming here, I just connected with him. He used to say that you've been to Ramesh's talks, following up.
Oh, see?
Yeah, we said we read Gautam's books in Australia. And she said, oh, my neighbor.
Everything is so interconnected. It's just, I mean, humbling.
It is.
Your strongest Inanubandhans are actually, or rather stronger ones are the ones you don't get along with. Because bandhan is bondage, na? Bondage. Bond, bondage.
What is the Sanskrit word?
Must be Inanubandhan only. I don't know. That's a Sanskrit word.
Runa is debt.
Rin.
Runa is debt. Bandhan is bondage.
Like now people say, na, oh, this guy is being so tough with me. Maybe I was tough with him in a past life. That cause-effect dynamic goes into past lives. Then we forget about this life. Yeah?
Om Sai Ram. Hi, I'm Sanika and I'm a student right now. I heard, I listened to your and Hemama's lectures on Sai Baba's channel. So due to the reading of Charita or listening to the sessions, the session, what you spoke about, like when I say that he is troubling me, he and me creates the problem. After the sessions or after reading them, the mind has become calm. Like I've stopped complaining a lot, but still many a times I see that something happens. And then when I meet my best friend, being a teenager, it's very obvious that when I speak a lot about me. So I think even Sai Baba in many of his teachings through you, come to know that you should be very calm, you should listen more. But many times I see that I talk more, I expect my friend to listen, and I don't know why. When I've stopped complaining, but still I'm discussing about it, and that's the proof that it stayed in my mind. But when I say that I read it, I know that that is not correct. Like the mind has to forget about it, like you mentioned to her as well. So why does that happen? Why do I talk so much about it when I say that I'm not complaining about it? Still, I feel the need to share about it, that this happened. Again, the point that this happened to me.
That's the way you are made. Some people are expressive, some people are. But what is the content of what you are talking?
It is all based on this happened, this happened. I just keep repeating the things. First, I talk about it with Baba. The first person I talk about it. Yeah, because I feel he is my person, why not?
You can travel. He won't mind.
Yes. Because the Stavan Manjari says that you are my mother and you are my father both. So why can't I share with him? I feel that I can. So I do.
Absolutely. See, if it is your nature to share and be expressive, I say, to Vatsal, one must honor that. But how deeply am I identified to use his word, with the story that I'm keeping on repeating, means how much I'm invested in it. Now, as you so rightly said, you're a teenager, the me is very strong. Even that awareness is there. That can only come through God's grace. Others at your age may not even have this much. But this story, which I'm repeating and repeating, I'm actually repeating it to myself. Anything which is going on repeatedly in your mind, or you're saying the same thing repeatedly, you're telling your own self. It appears as if you're telling the other person, because you want to hear it. That's what happens. And expression is fine, as we said. But is it based on doership? Hey, how could you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? Come on, yeah, you did this to me. That repetition will not happen if the understanding is that he or she didn't do it to me. They did it. Okay, chalo, they did it. But when I accept it was meant to happen, I move on. I walk on, move forward. I don't get stuck and that same cycle is going, you know, like that mouse on that wheel. That's what happens with us. See, what is Sai Baba? He is an ideal, the master, which is within your own consciousness, projected as a form outside. But you are, this dialogue between you and Sai Baba is going on within your own self. You see? That is how close he is to you. But it appears like I'm talking to a master, because this is the world of form. So I can relate to forms. But I'm actually talking to the source when I'm talking to him. When I accept the will of the source, of consciousness of God, I will automatically start talking less and less and less. I don't have to keep telling the source. You see, invariably the shift happens from speaking to listening. Invariably, because that is the peace. That is why in Tibetan, in a course I studied, an inner chamber course of Tibetan Buddhism, the monks said they can see much more from the face of a person than from what they say. Because what they say is based on their conditioning, and their face is an expression of nature. There are face readers who can read your face immediately. They don't need to listen to you. I knew someone like that. Then unfortunately, the police found out about his skill sets. So they would say, 2 baje aa jao, 4 log ko pakde hai, kaun kisne chori kiya, nahi malum. He said they harassed me. So he ran away from Bombay. And he would point out, you interrogate this one first. And he was right. You see, the face is very revealing. But what we say is very complicated, based on all our conditioning since day one. So then when we are speaking a lot, we are regurgitating that story all the time. That pure being of the baby, when the baby was born, was pure being. There was no story going on. The ego had not developed. That story going on and on is the ego, reminding itself of who it is. That is why Goldsmith's technique, one was, if you hear something which is of an agitating nature, let's say someone says they got into a situation or whatever it be, immediately he would say, delete the name of the person, delete what happened, and rest in being. Why did he say that? Because that is an appearance of a certain nature. Resting in being is who you are. Everything is an appearance. They come, they go, up and down, waves. Throughout your day, there are waves. But who is the one who is witnessing all that? That is forgotten. So it invariably happens that one starts speaking less and less. And if one does speak, there's a lightness to it, because there's no doership behind it. So whatever I'm speaking about or conversing it with people, all that is removed. And if I'm expressive and I love speaking, I'll speak. But the content changes. That is what happened. That is why I just said in the Pune talk, I think, that they asked students, school students and academics, one question and said, you have 2 seconds to answer. Why did God give us one nose and 2 ears? And it is the child who said, so we can listen double, one mouth and 2 ears, so we can listen double than what we speak. The child said, the academics were thinking, 2 ears, 1 mouth. Why did God give us the child? Because when we listen, we are tapping into the field of silence in which sounds emerge.
Can I ask one more question? So in one of your recent videos, I think it was with Nikhil and you, you spoke about friendships, like how you should connect more with those who help your growth spiritually. So many a times you see that if you read a certain prayer in the morning and you leave the house, then you're surrounded by many people around you. Suppose you are going by an auto. You meet him and he's angry with you because he came from somewhere and might be...
One minute. I don't think I said what you said I said. Because the people who help you grow spiritually are the ones who are your troublemakers, not those who have spiritual pursuits. What I meant was, your priorities change. You see, the word satsang means a sang of truth. In that sense, you find that you are no longer wanting to socialize for the sake of socializing, wearing a mask, projecting an image. Those things start dropping away. That's what I meant. So the preference is that I like to be in the company of those who are seeking truth, right? But there's not a should there, because everyone is your teacher. I just want to clarify that point.
I was not able to put it, even I'm learning, so.
Even I'm learning. So go on.
So if I read a certain prayer in the morning and I'm very calm, but then I meet many people on the way who maybe are, due to their own conditioning or due to whatever happened with them throughout the day, they are behaving in a particular way. So somewhere, just because I am a bit aware, I might not attract that energy immediately, but somewhere I feel that being around such people will affect me. Suppose I went to the office and the colleague who sits beside me, for an example, is always complaining. I know that sitting there will disturb my peace somewhere down the line. So how do I deal with it? Because again, we say that if I met her, this is the will of God. She...
Absolutely, but do you have the chance to move away from that colleague or you don't? If you do, you walk away. If you don't, what happens? See, if I have to meet friends I know who talk too much and just about their holidays and movies and restaurants and go on, I may choose, no matter how much I love them, that I don't want to keep listening to this. It's a personal preference. There's no condemnation. They are the way God made them. It's a personal preference. In this example of a colleague, supposing the colleague is sitting next to you, and you're not able to move, then you can do one thing, suffer the colleague or say, shut up.
So everything that is the will of God does not mean that I have to consciously and willingly endure negativity, hurtfulness, suffering at the hands of others around us. It's not about martyrdom. It's not about sitting and saying, look how much suffering I'm receiving. This is teaching me something. Look how spiritual I am.
That is what unfortunately happens on the spiritual path.
Yes.
Why? Because now my criteria is simple. My peace of mind. If I find a situation is hopeless, how much am I going to keep on trying? I can try a bit based on my nature. Then I have to exercise one of the choices available to me. Because playing a martyr is also an identification. Now I am a martyr. Feels great.
Hi. My name is Tina. I have a few questions.
Oh my God. We'll need another satsang for this. Are you a Bombay based? Which part?
Seabooks.
Sorry?
Seabooks, Navi Mumbai.
Achcha. You've come from Navi Mumbai. What is the time?
They are short answer ones.
Short answers or short questions? My answers will be short.
So I have to ask this or that. So,
rapid fire round.
What is the difference between a quiet mind and stillness? Is it same?
Yes, it's the same.
So the quiet mind is not a state of mind, like Nisar Dutt Maharaj says. Like
a quiet mind is the mind where thinking in the duration of time is not happening. The working mind will operate. The surgeon has to perform the surgery and use his mind.
Yeah, the thoughts are not arising.
Thinking is not arising. Thoughts are arising. There is a difference. We cannot control what thoughts arise. Thinking is not arising.
The second is the thought of I am equal to the witnessing without being aware of the body mind? In the first thought that arises in the morning is I am. Is that thought equal to the witnessing without being aware of body mind? We are aware, but we are not aware of body mind. There is just presence. Is it like that?
Yes. But having said that, witnessing needs the body mind to witness.
Can it be experienced in the full day? Can we get glimpses of those?
Of course. Absolutely.
That is equal.
If one is not involved in something in the duration of time, one is witnessing.
Is it again equal to having a quiet mind?
Yes.
So everything is kind of similar.
Yes. Quiet mind, witnessing, call it what you will.
And is it again similar, like the ego is dissolved? In the self?
Yes, because that ego is nothing but the thinking mind. It's the same. It's exactly the same. Oh, that was quite simple. Let's have more of that. Everything you've said is beautiful and perfect, and it points to the same thing. The ego is the thinking mind. When the thinking mind is not operating, witnessing is happening.
So we can be present, we can, only I am can be there the whole day.
It is there. The problem is it is covered with the me, based on doership.
Attachments, where we go out and get ourselves.
You see, as my teacher would say, if I pressed a button right now which wiped out your entire memory, you are abiding in being. You don't know anything else. Yes, Ashwini, imagine if your entire story was wiped out right now at the press of a button. Any problem? No problem. The story is gone. Where's the problem? Do come back. I like this. something new.
Someone can help cut the cake and...